Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Well, hello, everyone. It is not Steve, it's Becky Brown, and I'm so glad you joined us today. I am going to be joined by Dr. Jackie Mack-Harris and Dr. Jill Hubbard, but I just wanted to start with, just encouraging you, if you're struggling with anything today, give us a call, 1-800-229-3000. We're going to take your calls for a couple of hours, and, I talked to enough people that I know that there are some of you who are really hurting, and you really don't know what way to go and where to go, but we can help you get started on that journey. I'm going to go ahead and start with a call this morning. We're going to talk to Kirsten, who's calling us from White Plains, Maryland. And, there she is. Hi, Kirsten. How can we help you today? And I'm so glad you called.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. Okay, so me and my husband have been together 21 years, and we've been married 10. So about 10 years ago, we became Christians. We have three boys, 19, 13, and 11. And for the past, I'd say two years, I went back to work because he controlled me with money for a very long time. Mm. Basically, wouldn't give me any. My mom worked a second job and would give me $100 a week just so I would have money. Like, he would buy groceries and stuff, but would never give me any money. So I was a stay-at-home mom for about 15 years. So fast forward to this time now, 2 years ago, I made the choice to go back to work part-time, and he does not like that. He doesn't like that I'm working. He doesn't like that he can't control me with money anymore. So for the past 2 years, he barely talks to me. He looks through me like I am a piece of glass. He will love on our kids right in front of me almost to make me jealous. When we go anywhere, his arms are all over them. I feel like it's to make me jealous. So my question is there any point in time to where it's okay to separate with the hopes of reconciliation? Because I talked to him about trying to get help, and he keeps saying to me, what are you talking about? And he won't, I ask him why he won't talk to me. He denies everything. He love bombs me. We go through the cycle every week. Monday we were going to watch a show. We were talking Monday morning. Monday night we were going to watch a show together, and I had to go somewhere real quick before they closed. He got really mad at that, didn't talk to me for this whole week. So I'm just at a loss at what to do. He won't get any help. He won't go to anything. We've been to Focus on the Family, the marriage conference, Weekend to Remember. We've been to those twice. It seemed to help, but it's almost like he is like the guy in Proverbs who looks in the mirror and forgets what he looks like.
Mm. So well, Kirsten, it sounds like
over again.
Yeah, it sounds like a big struggle, and we're so sad that you're having to go through this. But Jill, what would you suggest? How can we start, Kirsten?
As you're talking, I'm wondering: are you aware of what your husband wants?
He won't tell me what he wants. He will not tell me. He will not talk to me. So a couple weeks ago, I went to him and I said, hey, can we, I'm very polite, hey, can we talk? Rolls his eyes, about what? Well, about what's going on with us. There's something going on. What am I doing wrong? What do you need from me? He just denies that anything is happening and says that he has nothing to say to me.
Well, you can hear the music, Kirsten. We're going to go to a break. And you're just wanting to know what to do with this situation, right? You're just trying to figure out what is the best thing to do.
All right, we'll do that. I want to separate from him. Okay.
Okay, we'll talk about it after the break. If you have a struggle and you want to talk to some wise women, Jill and Jackie Metcalf, are going to be with us all for the next 2 hours. Give us a call, 1-800-229-3000. You know, it is a struggle at different times in our life, but there's always hope. And so reach out for some help, and we'll be right back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. It's Becky Brown along with Dr. Jill Hubbard and Dr. Jackie Mack-Harris. And we're talking to Kirsten, who is trying to figure out when to separate from her husband. And so, Jill, I think you had a couple more questions that you wanted
Kirsten,
to ask for clarification.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just wondering, and maybe I missed it, but was there a catalyst that started him, like, ignoring you or not talking to you? Did something ever happen in your relationship? Go ahead.
Well, we've always had a very tumultuous relationship for ever since we've been together, and I never could figure out why he would do the things he did to me. So I've come to figure out that he's a narcissist. So as time went on, he's controlled me with money, everything.
Right.
Now he can't. So I went back to work. So now this has started the silent treatment. So now he's trying to control me with the air conditioner. So if I turn it up, if I turn it down, he tells me I can't turn it down and that he owns the house. I can't touch it.
Well,
so that's what he's controlling me with now.
Okay. So, I mean, and I hear your frustration, and certainly when someone won't talk to you and it seems like they're very passive-aggressive and doing things, you know what? It's a normal reaction to just get mad and get fed up, and then it's like the two of you are on opposite sides, kind of playing a game of chess almost, right? But there isn't any real connecting going on. And that's the sad part. So I hear you protecting yourself and saying, well, I'll just take care of myself. Another view, I'm wondering, when you went back to work, if he prided himself, even if it was, you know, controlling and not right, if he prided himself in being kind of the provider, caretaker of the finances, all of that, and now you don't need him, that could easily be a narcissistic injury. And so he's punishing you for not needing him as much.
Well, so Jackie, you can weigh in here, but I want us to help Kirsten with the decision-making process and give her some pointers on what to do to make that decision. Jackie, what would you offer her?
Well, so first, Kirsten, what is the decision you're having to make? Is it a do I stay or do I go?
Yeah.
Do I go with hopes of reconciliation?
Okay.
I don't want this to be over.
Okay.
But so, I want to jumpstart some type of caring.
Okay. So if the going is so he'll realize how bad it is to be without, then no. Because that is not going to motivate him. There isn't anything you can do that's going to jumpstart some caring. He has to care. You can focus on protecting yourself, taking care of yourself, managing yourself, responding to the things that he does in ways that don't escalate the argument, showing care. If you want to jumpstart care, rather than remove yourself from connection, which is the opposite of what you're trying to get, you have to lean into it, which may not be emotionally safe for you. I'm thinking right now of the love dare from the movie Fireproof from years ago. There was, you know, it's 30 days, I think, of things you have to do for your partner, whether they respond favorably to you or not. It's just you're doing what you're called to do. That can be really difficult when the person that you're with isn't reciprocating. But that's what the love dare was about. Can you do it for 30 days and see if at the end of 30 days they've made a change of heart? Because you're just deciding to show up every day, show up with love, show up with generosity, show up with care, even though the other person isn't bringing anything to the table. So if you've done that and he is saying, I have nothing to say to you, then you have to take him at his word. And people are often showing us who they are, and we resist the truth of who they are. So if he saying he doesn't want this relationship anymore?
No, he's not saying that.
He's not saying that. I've asked him if he wants us to get a divorce or break up, and he always says, you're not going to put me on the spot to answer that right now. But it's just never an answer.
So he's pretty, so he's feeling anxious. He's feeling anxious when you're asking a point-blank question like that,
When you ask the question.
Well, he can't ever go deep. He's very superficial. Mm-hmm. He can talk to anyone on the street for hours that he doesn't know. But anything deep, he cannot talk about at all.
So what if it's not that he cannot, but that he does not want to? Some of us want to go really deep and are deep thinkers and super emotional, and often the other person in the conversation is not. Because they're not doesn't make them bad or wrong. It could be possible that you're requiring something of him that he doesn't have to give, and he's sick of being put in the I'm not good enough category. Have you ever read the book How We Love?
No.
How We Love is a great book, and it teaches us about our own attachment styles and our own love styles. And sometimes we're paired up in relationships in a way that seems mismatched because of the imprints from our childhood. But we can learn how we interact in love relationships, learn how our partners interact, and then start some acceptance. If you can let go of your expectations of him and just fully accept him as he is for who he is, if there's no harm going on, if there's no abuse, there's no adultery, if this is more of a difference in personality and you have expectations that he should just be able to do these things, and he is.
Well, and I do hear, Kirsten, there's some interpretation of his motives.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone who doesn't talk, and maybe that's just from experience, you know, you know from the past.
Right.
But,
Go ahead. Go ahead, Jill. Finish that thought, and then...
Well, and so sometimes we need to step back from assuming we know why, like you said, he's trying to make me jealous. Is he? I don't know if he is or not.
Yeah, because sometimes the story we're telling ourselves does not match the story the other person is telling us. Mm-hmm. We're coming with our own worldviews. We're filtering what we're experiencing and what the other person is saying through us instead of through them. And you and him are very different. He doesn't talk a lot, probably because he doesn't want to talk a lot. It may not have anything to do with keeping stuff from you. But when he does talk, if that is challenged or that's not deep enough or that's not what you really think, then eventually people just give up and decide, why do I even bother talking?
Well, and here's the thing with narcissists. It feels like they're mean and they're withholding, right? And that they just have this tough exterior. But what you're really seeing is that false self. And really, on the inside, deep down, they can't tolerate much. Mm-hmm. They're actually quite sensitive to their own feelings of shame and humiliation.
And so nothing that you do to try to kickstart care will kickstart care.
It's just
going to
shame him more and shut him down more. Mm-hmm. And so what's counterintuitive, or what you don't feel like doing, is what you were talking about, leaning in. Mm-hmm. And you actually, and I know it's really hard when they've hurt you so much, but you actually have to kind of stroke them in a sense. Mm-hmm. You have to look for the good and try to build them up in order for them to come to the table.
Yep. Becky?
I think those are all great points, and we're going to send Kirsten a copy of How We Love, and I'm going to encourage you, Kirsten, to invite your husband to go and join us at the Intimacy and Marriage Workshop, where you'll have an opportunity to really work through some of these things. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have to do everything we can to kind of work through things before we decide to make
a definite decision. Yeah, if you leave, Kirsten, you need to be prepared that he might be someone that reacts in a way that is so hurtful and shameful that there's no going back. So you have to be prepared for the relationship to be over.
Right. When you leave, you need to be leaving because you're done. Mm-hmm. If you're leaving in hopes that he'll come chasing after you, you will be disappointed.
Yep.
And so make the decision to do work on yourself while you're in this relationship. A lot of times people want out of a relationship because they don't think they can have the life they want while they're in it, but they haven't tried to have the life they want while they're in it. And so try having the life you want to live inside your marriage. You choose the life you want, and maybe pull back on trying to get him to be a particular way so that you can have the life you want. Just go get yours, okay. Like you went and got a job. Mm-hmm. Just go get yours. So read the book, whether he reads it or not. The book, we're sending you the book for you to focus on you. And if you do your work, you're liable to see a big difference in how you interact with him in this relationship. Just let him be, and then model the behavior you want to see. You want to see change in him, you start making the change and watch him start doing the same.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, now we're going to go to Rachel. Thanks for calling, Kirsten. We're going to go to Rachel, who's calling us from Anaheim, California, listens on KKLA. Hi, Rachel. Thanks for waiting. How can we help you today?
Hi. I have an 18-year-old daughter, and she's vaping marijuana. During the lockdown, we learned that our daughter had been sexually abused as a young child by another family child member. She has been physically and emotionally abused, and she attempted suicide last August. She is currently in therapy inside and outside of school and being medically treated for depression. My husband is currently in treatment for anger management, and I am currently in treatment for codependency. There's a lot of work ahead for us. But last week, I received an email from one of her teachers regarding missing homework that was required for her to do before she graduates in the next week or so. When I began the conversation with her, she actually said that her teachers were wrong and that she had done her work. And the conversation conversation went south. I said until she has spoken to her teachers the following day, she wouldn't have privileges of the house, such as her phone and other things, and she didn't like that at all, so she left. She went to go stay with her adult sister in a nearby apartment. We have found marijuana in the house and in the car. She doesn't have, like I said, her driving privileges. I don't
Rachel,
know how
what,
to react
what's,
when
what's
she
a question
comes home.
That we can What's a question that we can answer for you?
I don't know how to react and put a plan together for when she does come back. She will have to come back soon. From what I understand, her sister is also having issues with her, and she's breaking rules of her house as well. She hitchhiked back from L.A. the other day. So I don't know what kind of plan to put in place that's sensitive to her as well. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good place to start. Jill or Jackie, who wants to go first?
I have a question. You said she's been in treatment for depression because of the suicidality. Is she in therapy? Mm-hmm. Is she under a psychiatrist's care? Is she on meds?
Both.
Okay.
All of it. She's on all of it, yeah.
And is she compliant with her therapy? Does she like the therapist?
She does like the therapist. However, there was a changeover that happened some months back, and she's currently with a newer therapist, and that relationship is still new to her and still developing.
Mm-hmm. So there's been a change.
Right. So I mean, these are trying times that you're in. And this, I wish this were unusual, but I've just seen so many families where in like the last year of high school, kids just are breaking down, they're getting into the vaping, it seems to have a huge impact on them. Some kids, you know, skate through and they're okay, and other kids, it induces depression mm-hmm. and suicidality. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what happened to my kid? And you find that all of the things that you're used to doing don't necessarily work, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So part of this is you guys are trying to get through to the other side of it with the least amount of damage. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it, right? But I think just doing straight boundaries and consequences alone is not enough.
Right.
Is not enough, definitely. And you want, and I hear the music, but you want to be getting your kid to engage in their own self-care. And so sometimes talking differently, because at 18, she's going to be launching, hopefully. And so she's got to be in charge, and she's got to make some decisions for herself, not just in reaction to mom and dad or pushing against authority. And so...
Yeah, it is a tough time. You can hear the music. We're going to come back after the break and give you a couple of steps, Rachel. You know, wouldn't it be great if it was easy, but it's not. And we are here to help you. You can call us at 1-800-229-3000. We'll be right back.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. It's Becky Brown with Dr. Jill Hubbard and Dr. Jackie Mack Harris answering your calls. And right now we are talking with Rachel, whose 18-year-old daughter is really struggling with a couple of things. And Rachel, we want to give you a couple of steps to kind of move forward to help this relationship, to help your daughter. And Jackie or Jill, who wants to go?
So as I was listening to you, Rachel, I thought, wow, they're all working hard mm-hmm. to be better. So what if you mm-hmm. had a conversation or responded to your daughter from that perspective? You're doing this work. You're in treatment and recovery for codependency. What are you learning about yourself that can help you in how you respond to her? And be curious, where is she? Where is she internally? What is she thinking? What's going on for her? Be curious instead of...
furious.
Accused.
Yeah, instead of furious.
Yeah,
I like that, Becky.
I like that too. So, because it sounds like you're concerned. It doesn't sound like anger. It sounds like maybe fear and concern. And sometimes that doesn't come through to our kids because they mm-hmm. hear criticism and accusation, especially when they're in that young adult phase. And keep in mind, she's in adolescence, she's 18, but her prefrontal cortex is not fully formed yet.
Right.
So this is the time in which they're learning how to be adults, how to do life on their own. So they're making choices that they think they have the answers. They know that this is the right way to go, and then it's a mistake, and they learn from it. The same way we did. I always tell my kids, I'm transparent. I will be open mm-hmm. and honest so you don't make the same mistakes I made, but I am aware they're going to make new mistakes. So I'll say be original. Mm-hmm. Make new mistakes. Learn from mine. I'm going to share them. So you know, so have you shared with her your story, or does she feel like you can't relate to her struggle? And so I would just be curious and open, because that's what happens in therapy. The relationship is they're coming, they're bringing hopefully mm-hmm. their whole selves, and we just accept whatever they bring. We're just going yeah. to accept them and be there and be curious about them, and that begins to form a relationship that provides safety where they can share their truth and not be demeaned for it or shamed for it, even if I don't like it. And so with my kids, same thing. Mom, can right. I tell you something? My answer was always, you can tell me anything. I might not like it.
Right.
And sometimes it was terrifying. I was carpool mm-hmm. mom. So sometimes I heard things that was like, terrifying.
Yeah.
But I held it because these kids trusted me. And mm-hmm. then there were times where I would get to walk with them to their parents and have these hard conversations. So think about how it's impacting you, and hold yours okay. so that you can go talk to your therapist about it. But mm-hmm. be present and curious for her.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, Rachel, like mm-hmm. reflecting on how you are with her and your level of anxiety, because it's scary. Mm-hmm. You have a daughter that made an attempt. That's really scary. And so as a mom, you've got that anxiety going. You also want to step out of any power struggles, because in power struggles, both people lose, okay? So sometimes that mm-hmm. means instead of being upset about whatever has happened, it's stepping out and saying, I feel you really pushing against us. What's going on with you? Again, mm-hmm. being curious, mm-hmm. right? So ask those questions instead of jumping to trying to control the behavior. You want to ask the questions, again, to open it up, open them up, not shut them down. Yeah. And yes, there are, you know, boundaries you have to put in place. You don't hand a car to someone who's high.
Right.
That just doesn't make sense. Or who drives high. You don't do that.
And consider whether or not your boundaries are about safety or about control.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very good. Well, let's send Rachel a copy of How We Love Our Kids. Mm-hmm. I love what you were talking about as far as Rachel doing your own work. You know, we didn't talk too much about the childhood victimization that she experienced and that was uncovered. But, you know, we were talking at the break about this latest report that came out from the Southern Baptist Convention about sexual abuse survivors across the country and the reports that were hidden. And, you know, I know that's a triggering thing. You know, one of the things about sexual abuse survivors is that it takes so much for them to come forward. Yeah. And so with your daughter, Rachel, that was a lot for her to share, especially in a time of restriction. And then it's scary for you. You can't, you know, because it was a family member, all of those kind of things. And I think about there are so many people that this has happened to, and our heart breaks when they are not heard and not seen.
Yeah.
And, you know, if this is part of your story, any of you that are listening, there is help, there is support available. You can obviously call us. We want to get you connected with somebody. But, you know, Jill or Jackie, what would you say to someone who maybe this is part of their story and maybe hearing the report kind of triggered or just something that they've never addressed in their life? It can be scary to ask for help.
Especially when it came from a place of that should have been a safe place.
Yes.
It's not your fault is the first thing I would say, and I'm so sorry. I'm just so sorry. I'm sorry you're having to carry this experience and carry it alone and carry it away from the church, which is a place where you should have felt safe and protected and loved and listened to. But I will say for us in the church and church leadership, we need to do a better job of listening to people and instead of labeling it evil and of the devil and
or crazy.
If it is crazy, then get them the help for that. But to continually ignore the reports or the accusations just causes more harm. And so I just want to say I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you had those experiences.
That the church failed
and
those
the church
people.
Failed you and did not listen.
Yeah.
And I love what you just said, Jackie. We can do better.
We can do better.
We can listen.
We have to
we
do better.
We have to.
Yeah. We have
are
to
better.
Do better. Exactly. Yes, we are better. We'll be right back after this break.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the new member thank you gift of the Life Recovery Bible Personal Size, the one-year Life Recovery Prayer Devotional, the New Life Journal, a New Life Pen and Highlighter, and a New Life Zipper Tote to hold it all. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
This is Terry McIntosh, and millions of Americans are living with mental illness or know someone who is. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we're featuring a sale on books, CDs, and devotions to help you with topics like depression, codependency, fear and anxiety, and a whole lot more. You can visit our online store at newlife.com for resources to both help you grow personally and to better understand those struggling with their mental health.
Thank you, Terry Mack. And, you know, just to follow up on what we were talking about before the break, we have a 6 Steps to Healing the Wounds of Childhood Sexual Abuse tip sheet that you can get at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, and it's free. We want to help as many people as we can in every different area. There are so many struggles that people go through because of sexual abuse as a child, and it reverberates throughout their lifetime, and we want to get help, and we can do it for you. We've got counselors all across the country that are waiting to help as well. Right now we are going to go to Layla. who's calling us from Washington, D.C., listens on WAVA. Hi, Layla. How can we help you today?
Hello. Thank you all for taking my call. So, just a little backdrop. My husband and I have been married for 25 years, and I've always been the provider financially. And he had his own business, and it shut down in COVID. He was in prison and has a felon on his record, so it's difficult for him to get jobs. But I feel like I'm at a point where I can't settle for that. Like, to me, he says that's an excuse for him to get a job. He's always had a job, but it's just not helping me financially. Like, he's not consistent on helping me financially, and that's where I'm at right now. I'm kind of just like tired of him not being able to help me financially when he wants me to support him every way, physically, sexually, and everything else. And we're both in ministry, and we're both very involved in our church, and he does a lot of great things in church. It's like cleaning and helping and doing ministry work and preaching, and I'm like, okay, you know, he's doing great in church, but at home it's different. Like, I'm like, I have to tell him to clean, I have to tell him to do this and do that. But the main reason is the financial. He's never been consistent the whole 25 years of our marriage. He was away for 6 years in prison, and it's been hard.
So he's never done what it is you're wanting him to do now. So this
financially.
So financially, he's always been this guy. So all these years later, he's still that same guy. Mm-hmm. So help us with the question. How can we? What is it that you're curious about?
Okay, so the question is: as a believer, I know we're not supposed to have any resentment and bitterness, and I've been working on that. Because of the things that has happened in our marriage, had an affair, had a child out of wedlock, we went through counseling, you know, but I still loved him, he showed remorse, and he's doing better spiritually to a certain extent. But when it comes to that area, I just feel like he's always had a job. It's just that...
So, Layla, is this about whether or not you can stay now that he... whether or not you have to stay now that you've come to this place where his not working is more than you can tolerate?
I can tolerate it. It's just that I don't want to have any type of bitterness.
Okay.
About
so how do you not be bitter about it?
Now.
How do you not be bitter about it?
Because you have tolerated a lot.
And it's interesting. It's interesting that so something that he's always been, like from the very beginning, before he had a child out of wedlock, before he had an affair, before he went to prison, before he lost business, he did not work. But now,
he doesn't make money.
He doesn't make good
enough money.
He doesn't make enough, but he's never. But sis, he's never made enough money. So that's not a new thing. So I'm curious as to why now. Is this the thing that feels like a deal breaker or that's causing bitterness when you have no bitterness in your heart about him?
All these other things.
All those other things. So how did you prevent bitterness in your heart? How did you forgive? You fasted?
I've had bitterness about the affair and the child out of wedlock.
Okay, sure.
It's the Lord who has kept us, who has really been helping me. But it's just that there was a sermon preached the other day about... getting rid of blockers in your life, and that was a blocker. And then when it just kind of hit me, I'm like, well, I don't have any bitterness or resentment. And then it just kind of hit me because I'm like, maybe I still do, because I'll ask him, hey dear, I need you to help me with this bill that's coming up. Oh, but he helps around the house. Like, if there's an emergency, he'll take the money and sacrifice and pay for those things or get things that are broken, but he doesn't consistently help me with, like, the mortgage.
So but that's not new. That's not a new thing. He hasn't.
It's not new.
It's not a new thing. So there's something else. I think maybe a way you could work through some of this maybe unforgiveness and bitterness and struggle is by having a really good Christian counselor and maybe working through how we love. Because what I hear you saying is that, so you've done how we love, so you have an understanding of your love style, of attachment, of those things. You've worked through where you are.
kind of, sort of.
So like, do more of that.
No.
You
know what? Sometimes we have to circle back around, and we learn through repetition. Yeah. So,
and I've been through How We Love multiple times, but I also teach it. But I acknowledge with my group last year, it had been 4 years of How We Love, and I was in like chapter 4 of the workbook because I'm an emotional avoider, and it's intense.
So
and
you were avoiding.
So I was avoiding.
Really,
so it's taken me a long time to get through and answer some of those questions. So this is a you thing, not a him thing, because I hear you say, how do I not be bitter? And so do more of your own work. Continue your recovery.
Well, and here's the thing. Okay, so there was a sermon. So that's a great catalyst to say, hey, can we talk about the sermon? Mm-hmm. Because it stirred some things in me that I wasn't aware were still there. And so can we talk about this? I realize that I have this expectation. And sometimes it's like, if he loved me, he would do this, right? I have this expectation that you're going to step up to the plate. Yeah. And yet I realize you've always been this way. And Layla, some people are not motivated by money.
Right.
And I know that's hard to believe. But, you know, you're describing a lot of good things about him. Along with he's got a checkered history. But at the same time, he's involved and he helps and he works. He just gives his time away. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And so he's very generous that way, but it has an impact on the family. And I think sometimes, you know, to acknowledge the good in him and that you see that this isn't his motivation, and yet the reality for you is that then you feel the burden.
And it makes sense that you get frustrated when you have to ask him to sweep your kitchen, but he spends hours cleaning the church. That's ministry. And when he is doing ministry, he's serving in a different way. When he's at home, there are different expectations. And sometimes we create our own monsters. And so if you've always done everything.
If you overfunction.
Or if, you know, because we love our S's on our chest and the capes. And sometimes we need to take them off and put our strong woman hats down and just ask for help. And so if that's not been your norm with him, then he doesn't maybe see his that there's a need for him to do those things around the house. But if you ask, will he do it?
I think a great next step would be for her to go to a workshop. We're going to be right there in your area, Layla, and you and your husband can join us at the Intimacy and Marriage Workshop there this July, and we'll send you a copy of How We Love and in case you need an extra copy. But I think all of these things that Jackie and Jill have explained will be so helpful in trying to settle that bitterness and reconnecting the two of you, which I think is really an important, because you have done so much. You've been through so much together. But we're glad you called. I think our boss is in the room. Larry, are you in there?
I am.
Hi. What do you have for us today, Larry?
Well, I want to read testimony. It's really meaningful, especially with what's happening with us with our matching challenge right now. She writes, I was so excited to hear about your matching challenge on the show today. I'm one of those people that Larry was talking about when he said, you're one of the folks who keeps thinking, I should donate, but never do anything about it. Well, that's me. I've been wanting to give for a while now, and his words, along with the challenge, got me moving. I've been listening to you on radio since Minerith Meyer days. For decades, I'd only been able to catch the last half of your show on my way home in the car radio, but now I'm retired, love seeing you in person on YouTube. Each host is amazing and unique. I've been able to counsel other people, like my brother who went through a divorce, because of what I've learned from New Life. I haven't donated in a while, but I'm happy to do so now. Folks, we need your help for many reasons. One, to keep going. Two, to get the money out of the matching challenge. We can't eat up that money until it's given. So when you give $50, we can take $50 out. You give $500, we'll take another $500 out. So it is truly a matching challenge, and we need your help. So thank you for considering that.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back, and I want to encourage you, if you want to participate in this matching gift campaign, you can text the word MATCH to 28950. 28950. Text the word match, and you can always call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE and give to the matching gift. It just, you know, every dollar you give is going to be doubled, and in the month of May, as part of any gift that you give, you will get a copy of 100 Days of Freedom from anger. We don't want to be angry. This is a great devotional for you to spend every day in the Word, as well as just contemplating what it is that is causing you to be angry and get underneath the root of those anger. So you get, it's a win-win all the way around. You're given more.
I'm because glad it's wasn't matching titled gift. 100 Days of Anger.
Right.
No, well, you know, 100 good. Days from Anger. But, yes, yes, exactly. Well, and we're going to continue taking your calls. Hold on, because we've got more on the list, but I want to get to another call. And you can call us at 1-800-229-3000, and we're going to do another show after this one. But right now, we're going to talk to Kelly, who's calling us from Jackson, Tennessee, listens on WRJZ. Hi, Kelly. Thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Hi. Like I told you earlier, I'm a veteran.
Thank you.
I was in the military when I was 22. And a week before I got out, I was raped by my assistant platoon sergeant. Oh. I didn't deal with it for a good 25 years, or maybe more. And I started getting help at the VA because I started opening up and talking about it. They, you know, diagnosed me with PTSD, like, you know, they do, and I do have, but I don't like to grab onto that label because it doesn't sound, it's a man's label, not God's label. Mm-hmm. And I my problem is that I don't know how to let it go. When I got help, it got worse. Mm-hmm. And I heard other veteran women that this happened to, that they got worse too, and they started opening up about it. Was I just meant to bottle it up forever?
So, Kelly,
Kelly,
part of, I think, part of it getting better is accepting it. And that label is a way of categorizing all the things that you're going through. And so, while it is a man's label, God created man, right? And gave us the ability to create as well. So, don't throw it out because it's not in the Bible. There are Christians who do this work, okay? So the label explains all those things that you're struggling with. And so if you look at PTSD and then you look at the flashbacks and you look at the pain that you're feeling and the sleepless nights and the hypervigilance and all those things, it explains what's going on in your body. Those are things that you then have to. Those are things that you can then start to work on when you can take a look at them and go, wow, this is really hard because this happened. And therapy, I tell my clients, therapy is going to make things worse before it makes things better, because we're going to go in and we're going to peel that scab off to get to the infection. We're going to re-break broken bones that healed incorrectly and have them mend correctly. So the work that didn't get done, you weren't at a place early on to deal with it, you healed, and if that had been a broken leg, it might have healed crooked. So we've got to go back and do some repair on it, because your mind was harmed, your body was harmed, and your body still remembers. And as you start to talk about it, it brings back up all of those feelings. And one, I want to say thank you for your service, and two, I'm so sorry that your brothers in arms didn't keep that a safe place for you. And when you talk to a therapist and it comes all comes back up again and it feels worse than you remember it feeling because you've been keeping everything shoved down, that is, I think, the beginning of healing.
Well, right. And Kelly, there's a reason why you chose now to get the help. Early on, you couldn't deal with it and you could push it down. But what happens is that over time, we can no longer keep things pushed down. It's like our septic tank fills and starts to overflow. And so it has to be cleaned out. And it's painful because it was horrible the first time. Who wants to relive any of that? It's really important that you tell your therapist when something is too much, because you get to be in charge of the pace and how deep you go, how much you deal with in each session. And so that's really important. So talk to them about it and what you're experiencing. And don't just assume because you feel worse right now that it's not working. It's probably working, right? And
well,
you,
I haven't gone back to therapy in a year, so
Did you feel like you stopped therapy because it was so hard with all the processing?
Yeah, I did. So I felt like it was making me drown.
Okay, mm-hmm. So was there ever a time where you tried telling your therapist that it felt overwhelming and it felt like you were drowning in the emotion? And how did they respond?
But then I moved away from Pennsylvania, and now I'm in Tennessee.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know who to turn to down here.
Is there a VA there?
Yeah, there is. It's kind of far, but
Well, maybe we can see if there's a Christian counselor in your area.
I don't know if I want a VA doctor as much as I think I want a Christian person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I want to keep with God. They've asked me all kinds of questions, and I was brutally honest on how I felt, you know. And I just want to...
feel better?
I just want it to be better.
Well, maybe trying again with a Christian therapist, and you know sometimes
you guys know anybody.
We do, and we can direct you.
Okay. And you know, I'm also wondering too if you know Kelly, do you have community around you? Do you have people who you connect with?
Yes. Good.
Okay. All right. And so you feel like you're known. I know that this isn't, you know, a subject that you talk about all the time, but I think it can help when you have good connections with people who know that you're struggling on those days that you're struggling. Mm-hmm. You know, you know, to be able to say, today's a tough day and I just need your presence. I'm so glad you called. We'll try and find you somebody in your area and get you connected with a Christian counselor. We've got counselors all over the country. Jill or Jackie, I think I want to send her Healing as a Choice because it'll talk about some of those things, you know, that just are so difficult. And trauma is hard. It doesn't matter who you are. But there is help. We've learned so much more over the years, how the brain works and how the body experiences that. And so there's hope, Kelly. And, you know, we just want to encourage you in that way.
And so so brave to speak up at any point, but especially so far after the event. So thank you for being so brave and for speaking up and taking control of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, with what we were talking about earlier with this report and just with so many stories that we hear of people, it's not just women who experience sexual abuse, but, you know, it affects so many people. And it's something that then they carry for the rest of their lives. And we want to take that burden and heal it. We want to, like you said, Jackie, you know, redirect that energy so that we're not stuck in the past. And there is help and there's hope. We can help you find a counselor in your area. We've got workshops that maybe would be a way for you to sit and work through some of that. But, you know, whatever your need is, it is okay, and it is really important for you to ask for help because not one of us have it all right all the time. And I just can't say that enough. I think that that's the hardest part is picking the phone up or texting, you know, whatever way you want to ask for help. But, you know, we want to encourage you to reach out if this is part of your story or if there's something else that you're struggling with. There is help. You know, we've talked about May being Mental Health Awareness Month. We are aware that there's needs out there, and we want to help you. So thanks, Jackie. Thanks, Jill. If you're holding on, we will do another program. You can call us at 1-800-229-3000. Thanks for listening to this hour, but the next hour, we're going to continue helping as many people as we can. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.